Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson are back in the studio. It's been about a year and a half since they were here, and in that time, they managed to pound out yet another huge book together. It is the sequel to their Peter Pan prequel. The first one was called Peter and the Star Catchers. This one is called Peter and the Shadow Thieves. Guys, welcome back, and congratulations on yet another bestseller.
No, thanks.
Thanks. It's fun to be here.
Yeah. Now, my daughter loved this. I told you before the show, my daughter loved this just like she loved the first
one. And we did not prompt you to say that, did we?
You did not, nor did you
pay
me.
However, the 20 in his pocket is not.
But you scared the you-know-what out of her with this one.
Yeah, it's a little darker than the first book. This one starts out, the first book ended with Peter on the island and Happy and Mermaids and Tinkerbell and all that stuff.
And who doesn't want that?
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we didn't want that because that would have ended everything. So we decided to take the second story back to London. And London in the 19th century was a dark and scary place and a kind of a dangerous place for a kid. And so we send Peter back on this errand, a mission he has to accomplish. And he hooks up with a little friend, Molly. But the guy you're talking about on the cover is a scary, the shadow creature we call
Umbra.
Umbra, yeah.
Who is, of course, Ridley's idea.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you.
And Dave's creation.
Who decides, hey, book number two has got to be scarier?
It didn't really, I don't think we looked at it that way, but we did, when we got to the end, we weren't totally done because we still hadn't explained how a little boy could end up leaving his shadow in London, which is how the great classic starts. So we had to deal with the whole issue of shadows. Why does somebody detach from his shadow? What's in his shadow that someone else might want? How would it control you or not control you if you had it or lost it? Mm-hmm. And that began to take on darker ideas. And then we tossed around this idea of a creature, really, isn't even a person, but he's a creature that is pure shadow. And all, you know, throughout the outlining process, he grew and grew. And really, the story, he has a huge part in the story. And we love this guy. I don't know that we'll ever get rid of him.
I'm guessing, Ridley, since you've written so many crime novels and mystery and all those things, that you were in charge of the dark criminal element of the book.
Well, in theory, I am. But, you can't underestimate Dave's contributions. He made Umbra into this slithering kind of, like a snail under doorways, and really he gave Umbra wonderful qualities I don't think I would have seen. So
you mentioned that you finished the first book and then had things left over, and this is another hefty tome, if you don't mind my using that word, that four letter word,
500 something pages.
Yeah, right? So. How do you know when you're done with a book?
Well, we outline them, so we know the whole story before we start.
But your publisher doesn't say, we're expecting 565 pages.
No, in fact, I suspect they were not expecting that many. Yeah. But Disney's been really good about this. I mean, the first book we wrote, I don't think we ever thought we were going to write a book. We thought it was maybe 100 pages.
100 pages.
We turned in a book that worked out at 450 pages, which is a lot. But that's Disney didn't bat an eye, and they went ahead and published it. And I think we both credit J.K. Rowling.
Absolutely.
For the fact that kids they sort of showed with the Harry Potter series that they don't mind a long book as long as the story is compelling. They'll keep reading and they'll ask you why they want more.
You think halfway through, you know what, we could sell two books if we just sold this one at half the size?
Oh, man.
Darn.
See, that's why
opportunity.
That's why we're not in radio.
Yeah, because I'm such an expert in publishing, you should have come to me.
That's it.
I would have been there for you.
No, I was thinking more in terms of instead of just on the first day of the week, just saying, here's what I'm going to say this week. And just going, getting it over with. You make it last for the entire
week. That's right. We get 20 hours out of this, where some people might say, let's just do one really long hour, or however that would work. Yeah. So this is a sequel to a prequel.
Yeah, or maybe better understood as the second of a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we now think, in fact, we're working on a third book. Again, we got to the end of this thinking this would be the end. We still didn't have the boy leaving the shadow in London. Now we had the shadows explained. We knew that dark world, but we hadn't gotten to that last step. And we see sort of a bigger, broader book to sort of wrap up our little.
Oh, so you do see it as a trilogy. But you're not going to go the J.K. Rowling route and go seven. You're thinking in more Lucasian terms.
Wait a minute now. How many Star Wars were there?
Well, he did a trilogy and then decided, we need a prequel to the trilogy.
When you're Darth Vader, the teenage years.
eventually, he's going to get back to, look, it's my child in diapers, and we'll name him Darth. When you're doing stuff like this, do you guys have to have contact with the J.M. Barry estate? Do they have anything to do with this at all?
No, and not in the United States and much of the world. The copyright lapsed in most of the world. In the United Kingdom and in the European Union, the J.M. Barry estate The rights to it went to Great Ormond Street Hospital, mm-hmm. a wonderful hospital in England.
Children's Hospital.
Still has the rights there. When we wrote Peter and the Starcatchers, we approached them and we reached an agreement, and it's now published in England, the first book, with their permission, and a portion of the proceeds go to Great Ormond Street Hospital. And also, our band, we're in a band.
Yes, the Rock Bottom Remembers.
Yes, right. Crazy band yes. of authors.
We're yep. going to go over there in March and do a fundraiser for Great Ormond Street Hospital.
Which really they not... may regret forever, but we will raise them some money.
They had never heard us when they agreed
no,
to let us
their come. Image yeah. may be tarnished.
But that is the key to selling yeah. a band to somebody.
That is.
Don't send them a demo.
In our case, particularly. You don't want to see or hear us, really, before. But we visited the hospital when we were researching this book, and we had a really nice visit, and we're really impressed with what they do. So mm-hmm.
yeah, we had a great time going over there and sort of walking the locations that we're going to be in Peter and the Shadow Thieves.
Now,
the,
I just took a vacation to England a couple of months ago and went to London and Stonehenge.
You oh, have,
yeah, oh, you did?
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a scene set there
you
in Stonehenge.
Bet. We have a very important scene set in Stonehenge.
Yes, you do.
Wait, now, what time of the year were you there?
We were there just a couple of months ago, maybe 6-7 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it was stinking hot because the English don't get the whole concept of air conditioning.
No, they don't.
Not
have.
That it would have helped at Stonehenge. It's outside. But my wife was actually at Stonehenge in the late 70s.
When you could walk up.
When you could
sure,
walk
I
up.
I was, too.
I did that,
yeah.
too.
Really?
You, could,
yeah.
you used to be able to go touch them and wander among
yeah,
them.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You're probably the guys who ruined it for
That's
the
it.
Rest of us.
Yeah.
But when you decide to do something like that, and you're going to write in 19th century London terms, how do you go in 21st century London and say, okay, this is what we want?
Well, we did, believe it or not, we did actual research, which is a concept I was unfamiliar
what?
With. Yeah.
Dave Barry was involved in research on something?
Ridley made
it used to be educated guesses. How did that happen?
Ridley made me do this. But we knew we had some scenes. We already knew that where we wanted to do the scenes, and the question was, how could we write the scenes so it would be realistic? So we went to Stonehenge, which hasn't changed that much in 1,000 or so years.
There's a gift shop now.
Yeah, that's true. And went to the Tower of London, which also hasn't changed that much.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some old maps.
We found some very old maps. It was really fun. We found maps from 1850 to 1900, and they showed the progressive growth of London as a city. And that same reference material listed where hospitals were, police stations were, open markets were, train stations were, all of that. And so we could put Peter into a particular time mm-hmm. and say, we need him to be in this open market because Tinkerbell's going to have this fiasco. And we found a market called Brick Lane, which in the late 1800s was predominantly used to sell exotic animals from India, Asia, things. And Tinkerbell fits right into that. So,
yeah.
So we have Peter going to Brick Lane Market, which we did, too, on a Sunday afternoon.
And we read old police reports. London was an incredibly dangerous
oh,
city.
Man.
The streets, I mean, if you were not rich and you didn't have a safe house to go to at night, you were in serious trouble. There were predators on the street.
Wow. So we How Dickensian, if
yeah,
you
will. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we wanted to put Peter in that world. You know, he can fly. He's got that ability, but he's completely lost and doesn't know anybody. He doesn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to find Molly and accomplish some things. So it was a lot of fun setting it.
One
if
of the
you
other,
want,
sorry,
if you want conflict, put a kid into a city where he's a target.
Yeah.
You
know, so. Well, that would be pretty much any city now,
well,
wouldn't it?
Nowadays,
a kid alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly in the 19th century. Yeah. One of the other things that we noticed when we were there is, you know, in America, you talk about something old. It's 100 years
yeah.
old, or, you know, hey, let's go to Philadelphia. We'll see Independence Hall. That's from the late 18th
or
century.
In Miami, where I live, it's 1958. That drugstore was built in 1958.
Yeah.
Kids.
While yeah. we were there, we went on a tour. On the day we went to Stonehenge, we went around and we ended up in a little town, and we had lunch in a pub that has been there since 1361.
Right.
And the food.
And serving
the,
food.
The food was actually made in
1362.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you talk about old. That's, yeah. you know, 700 years. And I kept thinking about who's going to be the guy who owns this pub who can't make the business stay alive.
Yeah, it's a lot of responsibility.
Seven centuries it was there, but you couldn't keep it
you
going.
You couldn't do it.
So, I mean, that is one of the benefits. And you talked about Peter flying. Why does Peter have to take a boat in this book?
He doesn't have to take a boat. And
but that's how he gets to England.
He basically follows a boat to England. He needs to get to England. He's on an island. He does not know where England is from that island. He has no compass or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
The ship comes to the island with this guy, Ombra, bad guy, and leaves going to get Molly and Molly's dad. Molly is the girl in the story. Peter realizes he has to go warn them. The only way he knows to get to London is to follow that ship. So he goes out following it.
But you hit it on the nose. I mean, this is one of the things we sit and argue about at a kitchen table.
How does Peter get...
You know, I might be saying, why can't he fly? And Dave's going to go, and what's he going to sleep while he's flying? Or is he going to sleep in the water? Where's he, you know?
And how does he
know
where it
is? And you start to work through this stuff and realize, oh no, he's got
to
go on the ship. You
know? So he ends up hiding in the sail, way up on the ship, for seven really tense nights because... there's a guy on a ship who suspects that he's there.
Sneaking food.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when the Superman movie came out, we had that discussion about which superpower would you like to have. And people always go, well, I would definitely like the power of flight. And then you realize, well, but if I went on vacation with my family, I'd also have to have the power of super strength because I'd have to carry them. You know, it gets into those little micro discussions like you guys have.
I wouldn't mind the X-ray vision.
I want the power of being able to put on...
You're still a 12-year-old boy.
He wants to see Wiven's bones, because that's what you'd see, Red. Like, if you ever look at an x-ray, Red, it's not as exciting.
He wanted to be a doctor, and he wanted to be able to diagnose tumors at an early age.
I would want the power to be able to put on that suit and not and look like that. I don't care what else.
Yeah, to not look like a dork in a suit with a cape would be big, did your kids have suggestions after the first book come to you each and say, Dad, you got to do this
not
in the
suggestions.
Second book?
I mean, my eldest has read it, and she loved it. Mm-hmm. But she, you know, she now, because Dave once said that we have her locked up in a room and we're just waiting for another idea, but that we do feed her. I get ideas from her constantly because she heard that. You know, what about a book about this? What about a book about, you know? And it happens that she, without knowing it, that one time she said, how did Peter meet Captain Hook? That was the, it wasn't write a book about it, Daddy. It was just, you know, innocent as can be, and there was a book.
And there you go. Yeah. How about your kids, Dave?
Well, I have two, and my son, who is in his 20s, read, it's the first book I ever wrote that he read. it was what they call an ARC, an advanced reader's copy, and delivered to the house. And he said, what's that? I said, it's the book I wrote with Ridley, and you know, this is a year and a half ago. So can I look at it? And I said, yeah. And he took it and it wandered off the way, and he didn't return it. And then he called me the next day and said, I would stay up and read. So that was high praise.
Yeah.
My daughter is six, and she is not ready.
She's not quite there yet.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, then probably a little too scary for you to read to her.
Yeah, I'll wait like a year or two for her.
Did you do the same method of writing that you did? I mean, when you were here for the first book, you said basically it was done by email.
Ping pong, we call it. Back and forth, yep. That's what we did.
Yeah, we outline in person, and the outlining seems to take longer now. Maybe instead of a few days or a week, it seems to take a week or two or three, and then back and forth. We divide them by characters. One of us takes the light, happy, breezy, funny characters.
I wonder which
one of
the
us
two
takes
that would be.
The evil, dark mothers, and then that person starts that first draft of that chapter, and back and forth it goes.
And was it easier the second time around?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both knew what we were doing. And I think just the fact that we had created that world, we didn't have to...
That's true. The first book,
we sort of had to lay all this groundwork, you know, just make it what the world is he's in, who he is, and then slowly build to how he would develop these amazing powers. In the second book, we'd done all that. We had all these characters, and it was time to just run with the plot.
Mm-hmm. And were there ever phone calls where you'd pick it up and call Ridley and say, we cannot do that in this book?
Oh, he says that all the time. I think in some ways that's Dave's role.
A mermaid would not say that.
we've developed a code for that.
Yeah.
We call it time-traveling hamsters.
I'm sorry, what?
Whenever
time-traveling hamsters?
Whenever somebody proposes a plot thing that just even for the, you know, basically we have an unreal world to begin with. There are mermaids in our world, you know. But if something just does, that couldn't be possible. I call it time-traveling hamsters. And it's too unrealistic even for our world.
Did someone suggest time-traveling hamsters at some
point? Well, I'm not naming any names. No, that's how it became a code. It was an insult I dreamed up one day for a plot idea Ridley had.
Uh-huh. Ridley, that's just like time-traveling hamsters, and then it stuck.
And there you go. Yeah. So your kids didn't really offer specific suggestions, but I'm guessing after the first book you heard from kids.
Oh, we've had so much feedback from the kids. It's fabulous. I mean, mostly about them loving it and reading it quickly. I mean, these kids are, and what's funny about this now is that we show up for the Peter and the Shadow Thieves that we're going to be, you know, talking about and signing tonight.
Yeah.
And the kids think that book three could possibly be here next week.
Yes.
You know?
Which is nice. I mean,
it is nice. It's a great compliment.
But they don't really care about us at all. They don't care who we are. They don't care about reviews. They don't care about sales. They don't care about anything. All they want to know is, when's the next one? Or, you know, why did the crocodile get so big? You know, they have questions about the story, never about you.
One of the kids about a week ago had the best question. He said, now look, if Captain Hook's ship broke up on the reef and he washed ashore, what did he eat?
Mm. And we don't know.
And it was great.
We didn't have an answer to that.
Bananas, pineapples, I don't know. You know. But it was great. He thought it through that far.
Yeah.
That's the thing about kids. They give you no slack.
That's why I would think that you would come up with ideas and you'd have to take out a piece of paper and go, you know what, we'll have to do that in the next book or something like that. We'll take a break and come back here in a moment. Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, the new book is called Peter and the Shadow Thieves, already a bestseller, but you can get your copy tonight and have them sign it when you go to the county library in Frontenac. It's at 1640 South Lindbergh. It starts at 7 o'clock, but the doors will open at 6, and I'm guessing there'll be kids lined up at about 5:30 for Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. They're here today on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio this afternoon with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. Does it have to be billed that way from left to right on the book every time? Do you always get top billing, Dave?
That's left billing.
Left to right, it would be Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, and right to left. Ridley, how come your name isn't first on there?
B comes before P.
Oh, it's alpha and D before R. I see. Okay. Their new book is called Peter and the Shadow Thieves. It is a sequel to their prequel. The first book was called Peter and the Star Catchers, was a runaway bestseller. I think 47 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, although I always hear that, and I don't know anybody who actually looks at the New York Times bestseller
only
list.
Authors do.
Well, authors pay strict attention.
Well, that's my question. Do you wake up every morning or every week? And
now, what happens is every Wednesday you get an email from your publisher.
Late Wednesday night.
And it's because when the list, not for the Sunday coming, but the one after that. I mean, it's basically 10 days ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But you get an email and it tells you where you are on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So you try not to think about that.
Because
really, it doesn't do you any good to think about it. But inevitably, you find yourself, it's Wednesday. It's going to come today. I wonder, so.
It's gratifying when that number goes up.
It's nice. It's very nice. Yeah.
And we've been very lucky with this book. It debuted at number 3, went right to number 1, has been there for 3 weeks. So
that's fantastic.
We never reached number 1 with the last book,
no,
so
that's
fun.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to include some phone calls here, 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. So you don't have to wait until tonight to go ask them a question. And if your kids are listening and they've read the books, they can ask questions as well. It is mostly kids coming up with questions at the book signings?
Yes.
Parents raise their hands, but we don't call on them.
when parents ask questions, it's typically about the process of writing. It's like, so how do you write, or when do you write, or who are your influences? Will it be a movie? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And kids' questions are always, how come Peter has a sword? Where does he get the sword? You know, that kind of question.
Yes.
So,
all right, since I'm an adult, will it be a movie? How's that movie deal going?
We sold the option after 13 months of negotiation. We sold the option to Disney Pictures. They intend to make an animated feature out of it, like Cars or Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
They hired a writer from Pirates of the Caribbean to script it. He's been through 2 drafts. They love it. And so everything feels like they're going to go ahead and make one. They take about 3 years to make one of these animated features. But whether it'll ever happen, who knows?
Do you have to love it, or is it out of your hands
now? No, it's totally out of our hands.
It's like selling a house. I mean, once it's gone, it's gone. And they can change the drapes and the carpet anyway they want.
So it could be Phil and the Shadow Thieves.
Absolutely. It could be a space alien movie.
It could. Peter and Police Academy 7.
Oh,
you know?
No. Well, it'd be nice to see Michael Winslow working again. That would be the upside to that. But you're not involved in writing it or anything like that.
No, I think sometimes they'll ask the authors, if the authors are likable and not pushy, to be part of the process, at least at the beginning.
Of course, we're pushy.
But typically, the movie people don't like really interference from authors.
I hear that writers are not really big things in Hollywood, and they don't like them on the set or anything.
No.
And I've been hired many times to write scripts to my crime novels. Not that any have been made, but I have been hired. But these animated features are quite tricky because there's almost 2 movies at once. There's the movie for the adults, and there's the movie for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would be terribly hard to write because they have to have, I mean, Dave would be an asset because they have to have jokes that the parents get that the kids don't. There has to be a strong story. It's kind of a combination of skills that would be difficult for one guy, I think.
So I'm cutting a deal and not telling Ridley.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's well, I think that's what you've done with the books, though.
Well, it was his agent that lined up the names on the number.
But I think that's what you've done with the books. They're not just written as kid books.
No.
They are written so that anybody can read it and have a fantastic adventure.
We did not want to write down to an audience. I don't even know how you do that, but
I mean, to the extent that it's a kid's book, it's a story about Peter Pan, and it has magic and fantasy. So in that sense, but when we wrote it, I don't think we never either one of us called it a children's book, and we never wrote a single word in it, thinking this, we have to make this word a simple word so a child would understand. Mm-hmm. If the word we needed was susceptible, we wrote susceptible. Mm-hmm. We didn't think about weakening the sentence.
And Disney never stepped in and said, hey, you're out of your market, you're this or that. They just said, great story.
This book does not reach our demographics.
Exactly.
That can happen.
But it's getting back to the kids, when they read, if they don't understand a word, they either figure it out from the sentence or they look it up. But they,
more often they ask their parents.
They ask their parents.
And then their parents go,
I don't know. Why don't you watch TV?
Here's my favorite answer. Like, my daughter last night was reading something and said, Dad, what does sanctimonious mean? And I thought, most of the people I've worked for, but I can't give you that as an answer. And then it's the parent who usually says, why don't we look it up, or why don't you look it up? I'm going to watch Entourage on HBO, whatever it is. 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. One more question for me before we take a break. Since you're doing the book signing tonight and you talk about it being on the level of kids and adults, do the kids come dressed up and do the adults come dressed up?
Both. Much more children than adults.
However.
But we were doing a signing for the first book in Seattle at a big bookstore, and we heard these loud explosions outside. It was a packed signing.
Seriously, loud explosions.
Middle of the day, Sunday afternoon, and we look out, and it was cannon fire. And it was a group of adults who had converted a 1978 Plymouth Voyager into a galleon, and they'd cut the top completely off. They had masts on it, spars. They had cannon out the side and portholes and everything. And they were all dressed as pirates. And the minimum weight of these people, I'm talking women now, 300 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, they were large people, mm-hmm. dressed, and they had real swords.
And they had been to the pub.
Yeah. They had been into the garage, somewhere along the line. It had been a hard crossing for them. Anyway, they came charging into our signing, and we're going, after we finally get to, it calms down, and we go, this is great. Did you do this just, for us? And they go, no, we do this every week.
And then
they just go around as pirates.
And it's just coincidental that you happen to be doing that there.
Whenever there's an event anywhere, they show up. These like insane, but it's like not a bad life.
We did a signing in New York City at a big bookstore, and a 45-year-old woman came dressed as Tinkerbell.
Well,
with golden wings.
This is true.
The whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
And not a bad-looking Tinkerbell.
Really. Was this the Julia Roberts Tinkerbell?
For a middle-aged woman. What?
Was it the Julia Roberts Tinkerbell?
I wouldn't qualify it that way.
This was
sort of papier-mâché wings. I mean, this was somebody who decided to become Tinkerbell.
So there she is on, you see a lot of celebrities in New York. Woody Allen, Tinkerbell.
314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. We're back in a moment with Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. The book is Peter and the Shadow Thieves. They'll be doing a signing tonight and talking about the book. Will you be dressed in costume for this, by the way?
We actually do costume up a little bit for our reading, yes.
Okay. I was going to ask which one's Tinkerbell, but I think we'll just let that lie where it is. 7 o'clock tonight at the library in Frontenac on South Lindbergh. We're back in a moment on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Ridley Pearson and Dave Barry are here. I gave you top billing that time, Ridley.
Thank you, Paul.
Their new book is called Peter and the Shadow Thieves. Been out for a couple of weeks now. Already a major bestseller, just like the first one was, Peter and the Star Catchers. And by the way, unlike the Tour de France people, we have drug tested these guys before they came in here. And they have the normal levels of testosterone. Although,
I think if you go into Tour de France and you are not doped on something, then they should throw out for insanity.
Yeah. See, I would think if they found high levels of estrogen in this Landis guy, now you got a problem.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think he's okay. Completely separate from the book, how have you started your 2008 presidential campaign yet?
Yeah, I'm running once again. And again, my number one issue, so to speak, is that I favor the death penalty for whoever's responsible for making the American people use low-flow toilets. To track those people down. People don't realize, young people don't realize, there was a time that our toilets were the envy of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we had toilets that could suck down a mature sheep in this country. Not that we did, but we had the capability.
I don't recall one ever actually being done. Maybe a
couple fraternity parties.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But now, we save water by using these toilets that you flush over.
I've actually asked a guy if he could come and give me one of those black market.
You can't do that.
You know, the ones that they use in public restrooms.
And in Canada.
Do they have them in
Canada?
Canada
has better toilets than we do.
doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right.
Yeah. I like the ones
border
with...
Border dispute.
Yeah.
What do we have NAFTA for?
People actually smuggle toilets across the Canadian border. I'm not kidding.
No, they don't.
I am dead serious.
The big industrial
you're not allowed
ones?
To,
Dave even had one sent to him.
The full... You know, the 5 gallon per flush toilet.
Well, you didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
They just sent it to you.
Did you have one sent to you, Mr. Barry?
I never had a toilet sent to me.
He did not ask for it.
Don't know what he's talking about.
You're not under oath here. It's okay. I would like one of those. You know what I'm talking about, the kick flush. You know, with the handle coming out the side that no human hand has ever touched in most public bathrooms.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a real high-pressure, high-powered...
Yes.
You're talking about a man's toilet.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly the sound I want. And everything is done, and now it refills instantly.
Ridley, Ridley's good at sounds. Ridley, talk like a porpoise. We put a porpoise in our first book, and when we did the reading the first time, I didn't know Ridley could do that.
He didn't know.
And we came to the porpoise part, and all of a sudden, it's like a porpoise there. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a talent.
Did the porpoise make that sound in the book, and did you have a discussion about how to spell it?
No.
Well, practically.
And to be honest, I don't know that really a porpoise does talk like that, but that's how Ridley talks when he's talking like a porpoise.
Flipper talked like that.
Okay, that's right.
I got tutored by Flipper.
Yes, I saw Day of the Dolphin. I think that when George C. Scott talked to Fa. Fa loves Fa.
Fa loves me. He loves Fa. Boy, that was the worst movie ever made, wasn't it?
You know who wrote that? A guy I have a lot of respect for. Buck Henry.
Are you kidding?
Yes.
Buck Henry wrote The Day of the Dolphin.
Yes, he did. Yes.
You hate to have your childhood illusions shattered.
Yeah. One of those guys who you always looked up to, and then you go, well, he wrote Fa Loves Pa. Really?
Fa Loves Pa. Well, and George C. Scott, like, I know that right beyond the, right just outside of camera range was the pile of money they were paying. Because otherwise, there's no way he would have said,
well, I think
Fa Loves Pa.
I also think it might have been, all right, I'll do this so Trish can have a job. Because didn't she co-star in that movie with him?
Oh, was that? Yeah, man. I think so. It's all kind of a hazy memory now. Pa is not.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was Dolphin for why didn't I get paid that much?
I got to get George C. Scott's agent.
That's right.
He's got a stunt double. I'm doing all the swimming with the bombs.
I'll be right back. I'm looking for an agent.
Now, speaking of dialogue, when you guys are writing the book, you mentioned earlier that one person is responsible for one character, the other. Do you have to write all the dialogue yourself, or do you actually get on the phone and like act it out?
That person, whoever starts that chapter, that person writes the whole chapter, the dialogue.
I like the idea of getting on the phone and acting it out.
Do a little improv on the phone.
You don't like that idea.
I'll be Peter, you be Molly. There isn't any
exactly.
of that.
Exactly.
But it's, you know, you send your dialogue off, and then it comes back completely altered, and then you alter it a little and send it out. So after a while, it is like two people talking back and forth.
And do the two guys, you two, get into arguments over stuff that goes back and forth? Or by the second book, you've kind of realized, let's just get this done?
We shout a lot during outline phase.
Yeah, the outlining part is this part where you argue, because, you know, then you're trying to figure out, well, how can you do that? It wouldn't happen. And, you know, you get sort of wedded to a certain way the story should go, and the other guy will try to argue you out of it. And it's actually a good process.
I'm firing off 20 ideas, and Dave said, wait, you know.
We still haven't talked about my first idea.
Let's just get back to the first idea.
It's the time traveling hamsters That's again.
It. Ridley has a very complicated mind, you know. He's always I'm sometimes looking at Ridley and go, where is this coming from?
Well,
and he just assumed it didn't keep coming.
The man wrote crime novels for two decades.
No, I know. He is like a nuclear generator of plot ideas, and, you know. But I'll tell you what's really amazing about Ridley is if we come to a, you know, like sometimes you'll always have errors in your plot, and you won't see them when you're doing the first. So, this. And then when you're actually writing that scene, you'll go, oh my God. That wouldn't work because the boat was there and the guys were there and they wouldn't know that. You know, so it's something where you think, and I'd send Ridley an email and say, I don't know what to do about this because I'm supposed to do this, but the boat would be there. And then in about 10 minutes later, there'd be 10 ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of those would involve time traveling hamsters.
Exactly.
But he would have all these ways you could get around that.
It's interesting in sending those because sometimes then the answer is none of those 10, but it'll trigger something in Dave, and he'll realize, well, none of those work, but now I know what works, and I think that comes from a process of eliminating some time travel.
Now, Ridley, you have this ability, and it was always apparent in your crime books, to think through the most complex plots and think of those little things like that, like...
Well, that's what
did he leave the
door
open, or did he leave the door closed? Is it with a latch or with a regular doorknob or that sort of stuff?
I like things explained. I will admit that.
You're a detail man.
I do like them explained.
And are you the big picture guy in that case?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
I am kind of, yeah.
He is.
And let's put a joke in here.
No, I was just thinking of a story. The guy who wrote the Jim Chee novels, and his name is, I'm blanking on his name.
Oh. Don't know.
Tony Hillerman?
Tony Hillerman. Fabulous guy. Fabulous writer. And he was telling the story about... when he wrote his first novel, and you thought the plot was perfect, and it was published, and he gets a letter from a guy saying, "Yeah, I just had one question in chapter 17. Why was the gun in the drawer when it was And Tony Hillerman goes, "Oh no," because he'd committed some fundamental plot error, and he's thinking like. His career as a novelist is over. He's ruined. He made this unbelievable, stupid blunder. There's no way to fix everything. He says, nobody ever noticed that again.
One person.
And it's funny how that is. You think everyone is seeing these incredibly, because there are always errors somewhere in there. But people just, they're very forgiving readers. They go right past them or they just accept them somehow.
Ridley Pearson and Dave Barry. The new book is Peter and the Shadow Thieves. They'll have a book signing tonight at the St. Louis County Library at 1640 South Lindbergh in Frontenac. Doors open at 6. The event starts at 7. Go talk like a pirate and say hi to the boys tonight. This is the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. The book is Peter and the Shadow Thieves, the second book in the trilogy. Although I think if things keep going this well, it'll be the second book in the franchise. Do you think it'll go? Or are you already telling the publisher, look, we're writing one more, and then that's going to be it?
We're kind of saying that. I mean, I wouldn't say you know for sure you'll never, ever do another. I mean, I wouldn't say
because we haven't done the third book. But
it feels like the third book is going to sort of resolve the, as much as we wanted to do with it. And I think what will probably happen is Ridley and I will do some other book someday for Disney. Mm-hmm. But it won't be a prequel. It'll be something different.
And in the meantime, you're still writing your stuff.
Still doing stuff.
Not in print, but you're writing. Well, you're in books, but not in the newspaper anymore.
They print the books, Paul.
I don't know. I get them on audio. Dave, I bought the headphones and I'm going to use them, Dave.
Is a Christmas book coming out? Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
When will that be out?
Right around Christmas, Paul. It's a marketing concept. I'm drooling on the console. Marketing concept they came up with.
And Ridley, what else are you working on?
I have a crime novel coming out next spring, early summer.
Christmas themed?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Tell them the title, Red.
It's called Killer Weekend.
What a Christmas idea!
Doesn't that just make you feel like singing Jingle Bells?
They will be at the St. Louis County Library on South Lindbergh, the Frontenac branch, tonight at 7. The doors open at 6. You can pick up your copy of Peter and the Shadow Thieves and have them sign it and talk to them. And it's always great to have you guys
here. Thanks for having us, Paul.
Thank you so much. Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson here on the Paul Harris Show. This is News Talk 1120 KMOX.